keep your family healthy and safe, visit healthycanadians.gc.ca and sign up to receive the latest food recalls and allergy alerts delivered right to your email. A message from the Government of Canada.
Good morning, Zeke.
Good morning. You know, I eat that stuff.
Oh,
it's really good for you.
The leftovers?
If it doesn't kill you, it just makes you stronger.
I need to make a correction. Because after I was repeating myself constantly for the song of the band before as we were chatting, I realized there must be a reason why Zeke is asking me, is it really called My Famous Boyfriend? And no, it's not. It's The Famous Boyfriend. Oh. I've decided to personalize I guess.
I think it's better that it's Your Famous Boyfriend.
Either way, the album title is really funny, actually.
Shoot.
It's, I think, called Making Love Wrong or something.
It's okay. Impossible. It's impossible.
Oh, my.
To be exact, it says making love all night. Wait, making love all night wrong. Yeah, that's what it is. That's what the album title is.
No.
It's a great band. Even if you
upside down like a bat, that would be wrong.
No.
That would be wrong.
No, it wouldn't.
It would be like that. That would be wrong.
And Margot, how do you know that would be wrong?
Well, hanging upside down for, you know, the blood rushes to your head. What do you mean, how do I know? Duh. Just hanging upside down is ridiculous. Okay, I stop there. Go ahead. We don't have time for this, you know.
So, we're going to go into Zeke's segment, then. Yes, I just wanted to make that little correction. Yes.
No problem.
I learned something new from Margot. We missed you, Margot. We missed you with your creative feedback and your creative inputs and experiences. Uh-huh. So, Zeke, we have some more art homework.
Yeah, no art homework.
Oh, no.
No, you may have a famous boyfriend. I have a new hero. I have a new hero, and his name is Jacques Kiebel. Yeah, JACQUESKEABLE. He wrote a phenomenal, absolutely amazing, wonderful, stupendous, and absolutely mind-blowing book. It's called Les Folles Vies de la Joute de Riopelle. And made even more impressive because it's not even written in my mother tongue, the language that I learned to read. But it was, I was thinking about it. I read this all in one sitting. It took me only about 6 hours. It's 264 pages. It's in French. And I'm saying, this is almost like I'm reading it at the rate I would read a murder mystery. And I'm saying, that's pretty damn impressive. He must know how to write or something like that. And it's, I then started taking notes and everything like that. We'll get to the notes. But since I always lead with the no and the bad, the only, actually, a couple of things that I could have, like, had I been his editor, there are a couple of things I would have changed. One is to do an art book with only 4 pictures of art. Not good. But whatever. That being said, it came out last year. It's by these guys, Lux Editeur, which you can find LuxEditeur.com or in fine bookstores everywhere. If they don't have it, then obviously they are not a fine bookstore. But anyhow, this is the story up to date of the absolutely most amazing, my favorite, your favorite, our favorite piece of public art in the entire world, this city right here. It's the fountain that spits flames that's in front of the Caisse de dépôt et placement and sort of beside the Palais du Congrès and right in front of the Palais du Congrès and in front of the Intercontinental Hotel, right downtown. And yes, I said that right. It spits flames. If you haven't seen it yet, you definitely need to go and see it. And sometime around May, they will be turning it on. And just be careful. Don't burn yourself. And basically, it was not intended to be there. However, I initially, it was surprising because back in 2002 is when it moved and it made lots of headlines because everybody said, oh, it was made for the Olympics and it's been in the Olympic Stadium. And now the guys with the money, the Caisse de dépôt et placement, are coming and saying, we have lots of money. And so we want it in front of our building. And they actually got it. But there were lots of headlines and there were lots of complaints and everybody was writing. What's it called when you sign your name?
Protests or petitions?
Petitions. That's it. Yes. Thank you very much. They're writing petitions and everything like that. But this book sets everything straight. So in a nutshell, the brief history. Back in the late 60s, Riopelle came up with an idea for a fountain that spits fire. Okay. He made a what's called the technical artsy-fartsy art history term is a maquette, which is basically a small model or a real life-size model, but whatever, made out of plaster, showed it at his gallery in Paris. And a bunch of Quebecois radiologists saw it and said, whoa, this is wicked cool. And they really got into the idea and stuff like that. And about the same time, Montreal's mayor Jean Drapeau announced that we were going to be hosting the Olympics. And then these radiologists, because they're smart guys, because in order to be a radiologist, you got to go to university for a very, very, very long time. They suddenly said, well, wouldn't this be wicked cool if we got the fountain that spits fire and brought it to and gave it to Montreal for the Olympics? And they got, yeah, there were 12 of them because it was an expensive fountain then, and it's even more expensive now. And they all got together and they said, yes, this would be a fabulous idea. So they then bought it, and then they wrote a letter to Jean Drapeau and said, we'd like to donate it to the city for the Olympics. And Jean Drapeau ignored them. And he did not want to know it from a hole in the wall. He just was stonewalling them, saying, no way. I don't think he was saying no way. He was saying, just ignoring them, sort of like Margot does sometimes to me. However, it's okay. I don't take it personally, Margot. However, there, because of all the political machinations that were happening for the Olympics.
A lot. Yes.
A lot. It was the sort of thing where, although it was Jean Drapeau's idea to have the Olympics, the Quebec government effectively took it away from him and stuck in this thing called the RIO, the Régie des Installations Olympiques, as far as the way to run the Olympics and get everything built on time, because under Jean Drapeau, it was not happening in time to get the Olympics done. And there, quite conveniently, the guy who was the head of the RIO was cousin of one of the radiologists. At which point, they then took this letter that had been sitting on Jean Drapeau's desk, gave it to the guy who was head of the RIO, and he said, yeah, no problem. This is a fabulous idea. So then quickly...
Those connections.
Yes, it's always nice, especially family. Blood is thicker than water. So then it was obviously accepted, stamped, and duly noted and everything like that. So then Riopelle gets together with, Roger Taillibert, however I mispronounce his name, the architect guy who went hog wild with making the just really, really bizarre buildings that were for the Olympics. And they decided that La Jute was going to go right there. And so it did. And then at the time, there was also this whole sort of like a cultural corridor that was, because every time you have an Olympics, you really also got to do singing and dancing and films and poetry and all this sort of nonsense. It's like Mary Schoenaert premiered her latest ballet over in Vancouver, but I'm trying to figure out, okay, so she didn't do it during the real Olympics, she did it during the Paralympics, so does this mean that, how does that fit into everything? But anyhow, back to 1976. It was just an aside to say that you always have art and Olympics together, so that the two are not separated. You have fine feats of athleticism, and you have wonderful, wonderful things that make you think. But anyhow, there was this thing called card art, which I'm going to have to at some point go into anyhow. But the basic idea was that for the 76 Olympics, there was going to be art that stretched all along Sherbrooke Street from Atwater all the way out to the Olympic Stadium. However, at the time, there were a lot of really annoyed and angry artists. And so they made some sort of rather overt political statements in their art. And Jean Drapeau was not in a good mood at this time. And so basically what happened on one night, I think it was August... No, I didn't write it down. I should know the night. That's unfortunate. But anyhow, one night, he had some blue-collar workers come and... actually destroy, steamroll, bulldoze, and otherwise take away all the art that was on Sherbrooke Street. And there were some, some very, very angry artists. And so this was all at the time that the, La Jute was being installed at the Olympics, or at the Olympic installation, the Olympic Stadium. And so there, because card art had been happening, initially they were going to be having a big swanky vernissage with champagne and everybody toasting and everything like that, but because Drapeau had gone and destroyed all the art on Sherbrooke Street, they said, oops, maybe we should keep this hush, hush. And so there were, I think, 6 people at the vernissage.
Wow.
But one of the cool pictures is of Riopelle sort of hanging out in the fountain and with his pants wet and stuff like that.
I can imagine the pictures that they wanted to include in that book. Do you think maybe it was something to do with printing of the pictures?
Possibly, getting the rights issues.
There must have been, the pictures can tell a lot of stories.
Right? Exactly, yes. But then it's also the sort of thing of realizing that, back to our story.
Mm-hmm.
Where then in discovering that, where right now I'm very familiar with the whole sort of thing where it sprays, it spits fire, it's got smoke and everything like that. Actually, when it was installed in the Olympic Stadium, it didn't spit fire. There was no smoke. And on top of it, it just sprayed. It didn't burble and guggle. Or burble and gug, but bubble and gurgle, I think would be the appropriate terms. And that's one of the key points in the book that I found very, very strange, is that everybody, because I'd been introduced to it through the headlines, and at which point realizing that nobody really knows what the original intention of La Joute was or is. And it's called La Joute by Riopel, by Jean-Paul Riopel, the most famous Quebecois artist ever. But in actual fact, probably about like 75,000 people have had input onto what should happen to this sculpture. And so it's like many, many hands have been on it. And so, yeah, because it was the sort of thing, given all these sort of difficulties with the construction of the Olympic Stadium and so on, the stadium was never really finished. And then the RIO got their hands on it. And they basically then decided we need larger offices. And so they started to build stuff over Roger Talibert's, however I mispronounce his name's, original installation, and effectively hid La Joute from view, which is why I never heard of it until 2002. Because if it's certain, I was going to the stadium regularly, mm-hmm. and I had it, I think, in the back of my mind someplace that it was there. But just
somewhere.
Somewhere. But it's the sort of thing like, okay, we're going this way to get into the stadium to go see the, motocross. That was one of the most exciting things I saw there. But you don't see La Joute, and so out of sight, out of mind. And so then, yes, we then come to, it sits there. It basically gets ignored. It gets, nobody friends it on Facebook. Nobody enjoys sort of just staring at it and so on. And it just languishes there for about 20 years. Then the case of the Dépôt et Placement, the guys who have the big money, like billions upon trillions of dollars here in Montreal, decide we want to build a new building. And we want to build it right on top of the Bonaventure, what's the expressway down there?
The Ville-Marie Expressway.
Ville-Marie, thank you very much. And so then everybody says, you're crazy. Why do you want to build a building on top of the expressway? And then they decide, just because we can. And they do, and then they decide we want to stick the fountain there. And then that's where the headlines come up and stuff like that. And everybody says, no, you can't move La Joute from the Olympic Stadium because it was built for the Olympics. But no, in actual fact, it wasn't built for the Olympics. It was built in Northmont. The idea was made up and thought of in the 60s. And then it was a bunch of radiologists who said, mm-hmm. it'd be a good idea to stand. So I don't know, radiologists... Last I heard, even though they're really smart guys, I don't think they make sculptures. However, we're diverting. But yes, once they decided that they wanted to move it to on top of the Ville-Marie Expressway, as I have in my notes here, it was the proverbial shitstorm. There was lots of spilled ink with organizations. There was this organization, sued that organization, sued this organization, sued that organization. Everybody was up in arms about, good morning, how are you doing?
And they were like that to each other as well, because so many people were involved.
Uh-huh. And,
fascinating history for just one incredible sculpture, though.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of details involved with
yes.
it.
Yes, and it did, which one?
Who would have thought?
But it is the sort of thing where then, but even with all the lawyers involved and stuff like that, this is where money does come in handy, because despite all the lawyers, it really did get moved. And then once they moved it, it's then they sort of refixed it up and said, yes, we do have to make it spit fire. And then the other thing that I discovered in the book is that there actually, as opposed to right now, you have just the one sort of centerpiece that sort of gurgles and bubbles, as opposed to burbles and guggles water, and occasionally sprays the water. And on a cycle of about 1 hour, smoke starts in the back and then comes. Yeah, Margaret, you're talking about fog. There's fog that happens at Place Jean-Paul Riopel every day during the summer. As the fog slowly advances forward to the thing, then it stops the spraying and it becomes the gurgle and bubble, or the bubble and gurgle, or whatever it is. And then it does a whole sort of stuff, and then the fire spits out and everybody goes, ooh, ah, takes the pictures and goes home happy. But that whole thing was not what Riopel initially wanted, because there are 30 different elements to it. So you have owls, you have bears, you have foxes, you have all sorts of cool animals of the forest, because he was definitely a big sort of like naturalist sort of guy. And initially all of them were supposed to like spout water, and it was supposed to come out of their eyes, their ears, their noses, their mouths, and probably other places as well that shall remain nameless, since we have already talked about having sex while hanging upside down earlier on the show, and we don't need to do that again.
That was making love upside down. Difference.
You, anyway, yes, you do have a point.
Do go on.
But yeah, there. And yeah, that's what I've now spent a whole 12 minutes trying to just give you a synopsis of the book. And it is, to me, terribly, terribly exciting. It's the sort of thing where, yes, okay. Now to get back onto track and actually review the damn book. It is the sort of thing where the book is fascinating, original, and endlessly entertaining. I went back and am seriously considering rereading it a second time, even though it only has 4 pictures. The other sort of critical analysis sort of thing that I would say that sort of does not, could have been better, is at the end he sort of sticks in something about, what is it that I hear? Yeah, his conclusion, and then there's a chapter about graffiti. He tries to bring this out into a larger thing as opposed to just about La Jute, and it doesn't really work all that well. Although at the beginning it does, because he gives a whole list of all sorts, like a rather exhaustive list, comprehensive, rather long list of a bunch of other public art sculptures that had been moved, defaced, and otherwise changed. And you say, whoa, so there's a history of doing this. And he sort of just slides into then getting you the details on La Jute.
I just wonder how that makes an artist feel. Or what the artist
Well, there it's actually somebody when, because Riopelle was still alive when they were planning on moving it, although he was in the early stages of dementia at the time, and so they have it down on record that he said, when they said, can we move it? He said, whatever.
Well, thank you, Zeke.
It depends on the artist.
I guess but he did so much art, though. I mean, so
yeah, he's got one of those,
I was just wondering that only because when you become really reputable artists and you have so much work, I guess you probably get to the point where you can distance yourself and let the art be.
Depends. It's like,
but sometimes what about that creative control?
If you are a right-wing conservative artist, you probably want to have a lot more control over your stuff. If you're a left-wing liberal-leaning artist, then you probably say, whatever. And yeah, so there I would say, don't run, don't walk to your nearest fine bookstore and demand that they get a copy of Les Folles Vies de la Jute de Riopelle by Jacques Keeble. It's $24.95, and it's by published by Lux Editeur, and you can find it on the internet at luxediteur.com.
Well, thanks, Zeke.
Thank you very much. Wow. I'm going to go back and reread.
I'm going to want to look through some books now and find some photographs. Of that time. Thanks, Zeke. Do stay tuned. You're listening to the Monday Morning After Show, listeners.